Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey man, you shaved.
I did.
Everybody, everybody else in the entire country does the no shave November, and you're like,
it's screw December, all of you. You idiot.
Oh no. Welcome everybody to the Lake Show. I'm joined by my verbally abusive boss, Harrison Fagan. How are you doing, dude?
Hey, calling me verbally abusive is too strong. I only talk to you like that. The rest of my employees, I don't think I've ever called any of them an idiot.
In fairness, I basically kind of sort of proposed having your head chopped off to see how old you
yes,
are.
Yes, you did. I think you would propose that I should be decapitated yesterday on Twitter. So
you need to get down to like how old you actually are.
Excuse me for being a little salty. I know how old I am. I'm 27. I just feel like I'm like 35 when I'm in college sometimes.
No, I mean you act as if you're 35.
And I feel it like a lot. Honestly, I feel like 45 a lot of days.
Yeah.
Season's taking a toll.
It is. Today though, we're going to talk quite a bit about a few different things around the Lakers. We don't have a guest today, so we're just going to talk to you guys for 40-ish minutes or so. We're going to cover the starters and the starting lineup and how it's like when we were just talking about how this season is aging me, the starters are aging me.
I know. Actually, we already talked a little about this off the air, and Anthony is very upset. So for those of you that get excited about him like losing it and having like an ill-informed take that he like says the opposite of the next day on his next podcast, like this podcast for you. If you don't like that and you aren't excited about the two of us talking together, maybe there's a guest coming up later in the show. You never know. So you better stick around for the whole time and then like re-download the podcast and listen to it again if the guest didn't show up.
I have quite the hot take regarding the starters that I'm going to drop here in a bit.
Yeah, actually you do. That's true. We're going to have to bust out the Anthony's hot take sound effect.
Luke did, however, make a change to the rotation, and he is basically playing Michael Beasley, in minutes that Lance used to get. So that's been a good thing. I'm laughing right now because Mia decided that was a good time to now, right now, as we started doing our, as we started recording our show, she's doing dishes, which is nice.
No, well, she did dishes earlier. Now she's decided to make herself a snack. And she just, for those of you that have missed Mia on the Lake Show and on our podcast network, she just was like, I'm not going to wait till you're done. I'm going to make it. So she's making peanut butter and jelly sandwich right now, it looks like.
What about making a PB&J involves breaking glass?
Well, she's just a loud, kind of clumsy person in general, and so she does things emphatically. So, like, when she gets out a knife, it's like smash her hand into the drawer, like, clatter them around together, and then pull one out. And so I'm always going to be able to duck when she decides to, like, kill me, because I'm always like, oh, I hear the knife drawer.
Even more important question, crunchy or creamy peanut butter?
Mia, what kind of peanut butter is it?
Crunchy or creamy?
It's creamy.
Oh my God.
She's never allowed on again, right?
You're dating a serial killer.
I wonder about that a lot of the time.
Today though, also beyond the Beasley and Lance dynamic, which is I think a net positive for the Lakers, that change. Brandon Ingram is now talking about how his confidence has led to his approach to playing offense, and I think that's probably not great. I wrote about that for Silver Screen and Roll yesterday by the time you guys are listening to this. So we're gonna debate that a little bit. And then finally, we're going to finish on a positive. The Lakers defense is now as we're recording this right now, a top 10 defense in terms of defensive rating. That's pretty wild.
Yeah, let's file that under stories I did not expect more than 20 games in. I thought maybe we'd get like some fun with small sample size like early in the season.
Yeah.
And people would be like, oh, you know, like the Lakers, they could be better than people think. And then they'd like drop down to 20th and like kind of bottom out. And that can still happen. But 23 games in now, shouts to LeBron James, is a pretty impressive sample size. That's like, I'm not great at math, but I think that's more than a quarter of the season. Yeah, that's more than a quarter of the season.
It is.
Also, I just want to say, like, I appreciate you finally plugging something on the site during, like, your intro and whatever, because literally every other host that does this show does a better job of kind of plugging, like, Silver Screen and Roll during the intro and outro. And so finally you mentioned that there's, like, a website that we do this for where people can find the podcast.
Yeah, we're doing this for Silver Screen and Roll and not... In my last show, I did even worse. And
yeah, last show you plugged the wrong site. So welcome to the Lake Show. If you've made it through this intro, God bless you. You truly appreciate Anthony and I's podcast stylings, because I don't really know that we've made any serious observations about the Lakers so far. And we are five minutes in? Okay, that's exactly actually better than
minutes.
I thought.
Exactly 5 minutes. So let's actually make an observation about the Lakers. The starters need to go.
Okay, so yeah, I want you. I'm not even going to say anything. You drop your hot take. I'm just ready for this.
So in the last two games in which the Lakers blew out the Dallas Mavericks and then they really blew out the Phoenix Suns, the starting lineup has accrued a net rating of -19.1. -19.1. Those are against bad teams. And then this is kind of how it's gone. These first two games, they start out horribly, and then Hart comes into the game. And everybody says, wow, I can't believe the Lakers finished this quarter only down by this much, right? And it's because Hart comes in and he makes a lot more sense alongside the guys who should be starting. And somehow magically math freaking works. And it happens every single game. And what it turns into after
composed about this so far than you were before we started recording.
Well, I'm talking myself into anger right now. And
it's like I want to crying, like leave Britney alone, like type, like change the starting lineup, Luke.
Well, so after every single game, it turns into, well, the Lakers can't make a change to the starting lineup while they've won X of X amount of games. And I'm just saying, okay, so if a change actually needs to happen, the Lakers need to actually lose games. Like, I need to be rooting for the Lakers to lose games in order to see the change that I know is going to benefit the team.
Oh, like, you didn't ask this as a rhetorical when we were off the air, though. You just said it should happen.
I mean, that's where I'm currently sitting.
That's where
you're at. I find myself rooting for them to lose games so that Luke Walton can wake up and change the damn lineup. Like, what are we doing
that
here?
Clip and use that to plug the show tomorrow. Just like, I find myself rooting for the Lakers. Well, I'm not going to say it. So, because then you get me back.
Then
so,
I'll clip you right back.
Not falling for that.
So what's even worse is that you stopped yourself before losing. So it's just I find myself rooting for the Lakers, and it makes you look way better.
It just sounds like an unethical journalist, if anything. And so that's also not accurate. But, you know, so the stat that I found most staggering was I was looking through lineup data just in general. And so I was scrolling through, like, what are the best lineups to have played more than 15 minutes? Because that gives you, like, still a decent amount of lineups. But it's, you know, even though 15 minutes is a small sample size, if you go much higher than that, like – Most of the lineups haven't played more than like 20-ish minutes. Mm-hmm. And so the starters have played by far the most, 230. The next closest is 55,
Awful. That's so bad.
And so like the starters have played 230 minutes. In those 230 minutes, their net rating, 0.0. They're literally treading water with the starting lineup with LeBron James.
And that's by far
That's like you pooped in the fridge and ate a whole wheel of cheese. That's amazing.
I'm impressed. Here's the thing, though. And so last year, I would have been perfectly fine if the Lakers starting lineup treaded water and then the bench came in and did work. And that was basically how the rotation was devised. And that's how Luke Walton built his rotation, was basically...
Last 2 years, really.
Yeah, right. It was basically... Our starters are not going to be able to compete on a nightly basis very well against other starters. So what we're going to try to do is make as good a bench as we can possibly get and then take advantage of the advantage that we gain by going up against opposing benches more often than not. And so that was fine. That's a great approach to a lesser talented team. But when you have LeBron James in the starting lineup, you cannot merely tread water. You cannot literally tread water. Because when he sits down, that's when the other teams are going to be trying to go at your team's bench, right? Like that's just how those rotations are going to work out. And look, this idea of, well, we can't make changes to the starting lineup while the team is winning games, like that's not leadership. At the very least, he needs to have a conversation with these guys and say, here's the data. It's real loud. It's screaming at everybody who has paid any attention to it whatsoever that you guys aren't working together. And so either you guys turn it around, play with more energy, play, because that's the other thing too, is that they seem to be sleepwalking when they're out there together. It's not good basketball.
I mean, in fairness, they did start at 12:30 on Sunday, so I think we were all sleepwalking.
Josh Hart came in and wasn't sleepwalking.
Yeah, I mean, I think Michael Beasley, if you haven't watched his post-game interview yet from yesterday, it was pretty funny. He was trying to find words to just say that the Lakers didn't start that well while not, like, you know,
throwing making, the starters under the bench.
Just not making the joke that everybody else was making about, mm-hmm. like, why they probably didn't start that well on a Sunday morning.
Nah, yeah. I was also hungover. So yeah, I can't really judge.
I'm not surprised. You were off this weekend. So yeah. I think the other thing is I get what you're saying about Luke, and that's not leadership and he needs to go and change it. But at the same time, these guys are not coming in after a win, and they've won. What did I say before the show? It was like 10 of their last 13, I think.
Since Minnesota. Since the game was when they changed the starting lineup.
Pretty sure that's when they changed the starting lineup. And so they've won 10 of their last 13 since then. Either way, whether that's when they changed the starting lineup or not, they've won 10 of 13 since Minnesota. And like, that's a pretty good stretch. And so I think that when you've won 10 games out of your last 13, it's hard to go to your players who all think that they're starters and all feel like they've contributed and tell them that one of them needs to come off the bench now, because these guys are not walking into the locker room afterwards and getting a bunch of lineup data spreadsheets. They're looking at the final, you know, they're looking at the box score, but they're also looking at the result. And they're like, coach, how are you going to change it when we've been winning? I think Kuzma has been put in a position where he is playing his best defense of the season. And so he probably doesn't feel, and he's been passing his best of the season, which I wrote about. We wrote about both of which things at silverscreenroll.com. You can go check that out.
Who helps him continue doing that kind of thing?
Who?
Josh Hart. Josh Hart guards fours, and that allows Kuzma to go out and play defense on the perimeter.
But then, so you're saying send Ingram to the bench?
Yes.
I think that's a tough thing to do when you're plugging him the entire, like, he's been hyped up by the front office and by everyone else, like, as this secondary, like, the closest thing to a secondary star for LeBron that the Lakers have. And even if that hasn't been proven out, I don't think that you can go from talking about this guy as untouchable, perennial all-star, oh, woo-wee, he's going to be amazing, to, like, oh, you know, Brandon, we need you to come off the bench. I just think that that's a hard thing to do, and I think that the team has to struggle for you to be able to have that conversation, for them to embrace it, and for them to not kind of go into a shell and feel like they're getting screwed over. I just think that that's the way these things work.
But they are literally struggling.
Well, that yes and no. Like, to further fuel the Darius comparisons that I get from my podcasting voice, not necessarily my analysis, but I guess we sound the same to some people. I don't hear it. But I think, yes, the starting lineup is kind of strong. I mean, they aren't losing by definition. 0.0 is like, they aren't losing. They aren't giving away lead. They're playing well enough to break even. But, that obviously you'd want them to be better than that. But at the same time, they're looking at the final result. And I think that if you've won 10 of 13, it's just a hard case to make. Even if you're saying, look, this lineup data isn't, they're like, analytics nerd, get this stuff out of my face. Like, look cool at the scoreboard.
That's great.
And then they give Luke a noogie.
I'm not even saying that I would prefer a change be made. Let's be clear. But all I'm asking for is some kind of conversation.
Aren't you saying that? You just said that you were hoping that they lost so that
I'm saying I want them to make a change to the starting lineup. All I'm asking for, though, is Luke, pull these guys aside and say, this is why we might make a change eventually, is because this data where the lineup that we are using by far more than any other lineup is merely treading water.
I agree with you that if we were playing 2K right now, Ingram would be the guy that I'd put on the bench. Like, just in terms of stylistically, I think he just makes more sense to stagger with LeBron. We've seen that borne out. He's been playing better with LeBron off of the floor and with the bench. And so, like, I'm totally with that. But, like, just in a vacuum. But these things don't exist in a vacuum. And you've hyped this guy up, and I think that he somewhat justifiably thinks that he should be a starter. And, like, if you remember when he was coming back and they asked him about coming off the bench, he laughed.
Yeah, that's great.
I think that's indicative of his mindset.
It is, and young players tend to do that kind of thing. They tend to be harder to convince of that, of taking that kind of role.
And so do you take the risk?
It's also literally Luke Walton's job.
Yeah, so in this part, I'm with you on some level on that. Luke is being marketed, and the people that are defending him are saying, okay, like, maybe he's not the best X's and O's coach. Maybe his staff isn't the best, but I've made this argument. He is an amazing manager of people and egos, and he seems to just relate well with basically any player that comes through here on the roster. They seem to get along on a personal level. Mm-hmm. And so if you're that guy,
Brooke Lopez, then you should be able to, Julius
Brooke Lopez. Julius Randle and him, I think, had a positive relationship. I think Julius Randle's breakdown was probably more with the front office. Like, he and Julius, like, from when he came in, seemed to have a fairly positive relationship. I think so if he's this manager of people and this manager of egos and this Phil Jackson, not Phil Jackson-esque, but like that was the thing that people Steve always Kerr-esque. Talk about. Phil, he was this amazing guy at like getting players to buy in, getting the best out of a lot of personalities. And so if Luke is that guy, and maybe not on the same level as Phil, but if that's the type of coach he is, then he probably should have to do this and have to figure this out. But I think that there's context here, and I don't think that that's necessarily an easy thing to do. I don't think that coaching at any level, they're generally like, well, you know, the lineup data shows that this lineup is struggling, but we're winning, so I'm going to change things. That's just generally not how coaches operate.
I'm asking for him to go to the starters and say, you guys need to pick it up. Because at some point, if we continue struggling this way, that change is going to be coming. That way they aren't blindsided when that change comes.
Yeah, I mean, maybe that, and you, we don't know that he hasn't had that conversation yet.
We don't. Yeah. I would hope he did. I would hope he has.
But I think there's an easy context under
which to have it, too, by the way.
They've been winning. I don't know. I don't see it until they're losing. And, like, I know that that means that you're going to root for them to tank. So everybody that's at Anthony Irwin LA on Twitter, he is going to be rooting for the Lakers to lose the next couple games.
Which, I'm rooting for, you know, first and foremost, them to turn things around. I just know that they're not going to turn things around. And so, therefore, yes, I will root for a couple losses in a row if that means that that's what wakes up Luke Walton and makes a change that everybody knows needs to be made. This isn't some outside of the box thinking. This isn't even crazy analytics either. It's literally just these guys are the team is better when they're not on the court.
Yeah, you may get your wish because they've struggled against kind of versatile larger bigs, and so they got San Antonio two times in the next two. That's their next two games are against San Antonio, home and away, and then they got Memphis, who has Marc Gasol and Jaren Jackson, yep. And you know, so maybe. We'll see.
Maybe. I want to really quickly, though, this is the last point that I'm going to make on this, is that, you know, we keep on hearing how it's hard to make changes to whatever, to the starting lineup while they're winning. But Luke Walton made a change while they've been winning, and he basically inserted Michael Beasley into Lance Stevenson's minutes, and that made a big change. Beasley was a big part of why they turned things around against Phoenix. And that's literally making a change while you're winning games.
Well, so I think that that's different because you're taking a guy that was out of the rotation and you're taking a guy who individually, like, he wasn't a starter. He just was like a kind of end of the bench reserve. And you're telling him, okay, we're going to take a look at Beasley for a couple games. I just think that that's a lot different than sending Ingram to the bench. And Beasley, like, you know, you're
but
right.
Ingram's
Beasley,
still the Beasley in the rotation. Like, Ingram would still be in the rotation, and in a big way, probably,
it's
too.
Just, it's a big status change. It is. It matters to these guys. It very clearly matters to Ingram, by the way that he responded to when people were asking him, do you think you're going to come off the bench?
Well, guess what you do if Ingram, if it really bothers Ingram that much? He doesn't fit with LeBron anyway, so you trade the guy anyway.
Like, well, you don't want to do that
if he's so upset that the Lakers aren't starting him. Like, no, but I'm because I could see.
I think that's a little hyperbolic. Like, I think I think what you risk there is you risk him starting to go into a little bit of a shell or losing some confidence in himself with the bench or like starting to check out a little bit. And then at that point, his trade value is kind of torpedoed anyway. He's not going to be in a trade for Anthony Davis on December 15th if, you know, if he's coming off of being benched and he's not playing well because he's been sulking.
If that's how he takes it.
If that's how he takes it. And so maybe he wouldn't, but I don't know. It's just it's a risk factor.
Let's talk though about Beasley and Lance. I think it was a really big move. It's the kind that can really make the rotation make a lot more sense. I think it helps everybody involved with that group because Lance is kind of freestyling, and while fans really like Lance dancing or whatever Billy Mack says all the time, Beasley plays a little bit more under control, and that allows Ingram to be more of a point guard without having to always tell Lance, like, hey, we don't need that possession. We don't need this possession.
This is how Pete and I were actually talking about this on our train ride home on Friday. And I was trying to figure out a way to describe Lance's game in an analogy. And Lance's game is kind of like a scream you hear off in the distance. It's really loud. You know, something's happening, but you're not really sure if somebody's just like celebrating like a game being won or if they're just are getting murdered until you go up and you see the results. And that's kind of how Lance's game is. He's going to succeed or fail very loudly. Like, you're going to notice he's on the court one way or the other. And you just have to wait until the end of the game and figure out which version of Lance you had, or until he throws the ball off the backboard to himself and like tries to go through his legs for a dunk on a half court possession, he does everything loud. And whereas Beasley, the thing that I noticed most yesterday is that he's just decisive. When he gets the ball, he's trying to get downhill. There's one thing that he's doing. He's not dribbling the ball around. He's not like thinking about, okay, should I make the next pass? No, I'm going to go to the basket and then like throw up like a wild floater, like falling down hook shot over my back. Beasley's just not doing that stuff. He's like, I'm going to try and get to the basket. And if I can't get to the basket, I'm going to pass it and move it along. And so that is a better fit. And even though he hasn't been great, the Lakers are still playing better, like by net rating over the last four games since he came back in to the since he came into the rotation. The Lakers are better when Beasley is off the floor than when he's on. But you got to keep in mind that he's taking over for a guy in Lance who the Lakers are significantly better when he is off the floor than when he is on. And so just by Beasley's been a 0.0 net rating. That's going to be the theme of today's podcast. And so
that's going to be our podcast title for this.
Yeah, 0.0 net rating. But Beasley is just by treading water, he is a better treading water is better than drowning.
Yes, I can confirm
by definition.
Yeah, Jack from Titanic can confirm that analysis.
Rose is selfish. I'm just there's so much like that was. How does that make it all the way to theaters with it's like there's so clearly room for him on the board and he's like, nah, fam, I'm out.
Maybe she was just that tough to be around.
Yeah.
Like, look, I could save he's myself. Like, look, or
there's a way to get out of out of this fling. I'm like starting to have doubts about this. I'm just.
He literally ghosted her.
Yeah. Oh, God. So in this analogy, Michael Beasley is Rose and Lance is whatever Leonardo DiCaprio's name was in that movie.
Jack.
I don't.
It was Jack.
There we go. Did I just say that two sentences ago?
Yeah. This is Jack Dawson.
Yeah, I did.
I think so. I completely and absolutely agree with the point you're making, though, that Beasley's net neutral presence being not net negative is big. And it's also the
and
way
this isn't
that
just net.
Plays.
Like, you can look at what's going on the floor and you can discern this, too. It's very obvious both by net and by the numbers and the eye test.
That's what I was going to say was that because the way that the Lakers want to play this year is fast. They want to play in transition. When they're in the half court, they're going to try to beat you with speed on the perimeter and ball movement and all those things. And what they can't afford as a group is to have Lance Stephenson out there playing at a glacial pace, not just in terms of like the way he plays defense and getting out in transition and stuff, but also when he has the ball or when he takes part in any kind of half court set and he doesn't dribble between his legs, he considers that a possession wasted. And it's just, you know, he just doesn't fit with what the Lakers need to do, and Beasley does.
He's very much not a a Luke Walton player, which is why it was surprising when he was getting so many minutes at the beginning of the year.
Yeah. Well, they gave it a shot, and this is how...
I guess that's true. You get it out of the way.
Yeah, you give it a shot.
And maybe he comes back into the rotation. We could be, like, he could start playing a bunch again on tomorrow, on Wednesday.
Come on, man. I was in a good mood.
I'm just saying.
I was trying to be positive. I would have very little confidence in Luke if Lance makes his way back into the rotation. That's how I'll put it.
Okay.
Speaking of confidence, Brandon Ingram thinks he has too much. Brandon Ingram.
Yes, I was in that interview scrum with Ingram when he said this, and I didn't. He talks pretty quietly, yeah. And so I actually didn't hear him say it until I was listening to my recording after. My mic is a lot better than my ears, and so like I had to listen back to this thing like 5 times because I was like, did he actually say this? And he did. He said, I think sometimes I may be too confident, which is kind of an astonishing admission for an NBA player. Most guys don't admit that, you know. They're like, they'll talk about playing within themselves or whatever, but like to say that you're too confident. And that, like, you're just failing because of it, essentially, is the implication there. Is like, that was almost sad.
So here's how I would analyze what he said. And to a certain extent, I agree. And in the article that I wrote for SilverScreenAndRoll.com, a website that you and I both write for, and that puts together this podcast for us. Is that an okay plug?
Yeah, I want like at least 5 of those an episode.
But what I wrote for Silver Screen was basically that because look, and I can understand why he has this confidence, by the way, right? Like he's 6'8" probably, do you think? 6'8", 6'9"?
6'9", I think, right?
Yeah, so he's like 6'9", he can handle the ball like a point guard. He can get by most of the people who guard him. And do so.
And he can shoot over anyone.
Yeah, he can. So I, to a certain extent, I understand where that confidence is coming from. I also wish he had less confidence in his mid-range game. And I wish he had, less confidence in what he can do with the ball. And maybe that would ignite him to do a little bit more off of it, right? That's basically what I wrote, is that he's saying he wants the game to come to him. And, to a certain extent, I kind of sort of disagree with that, though, because he needs to do more off of the ball to help himself get into better situations to be able to succeed and not just rely on his own individual talents.
I don't think that those two things can go hand in hand. I think you can believe that needs to do all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think that, like, I think the reason he's not doing those things is because he's confident that he can do the other things. He's confident that he can play this way and have success this way. Mm-hmm. And right now he's not, which I think is at the core of that admission.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I in writing this article, I did some research on the way he scores. His baskets come at a rate, at an unassisted rate, higher than everybody on the roster other than Rajon Rondo, who was a point guard who dominates the ball, and LeBron James, who is... LeBron James, right? So you understand why LeBron wouldn't have very many assisted baskets given the way that he can score. And for Brandon Ingram, he can't score in that same way. He isn't as good an individual scorer, and so his baskets coming at such a low assisted rate puts him in tough spots. And then since Rajon Rondo got hurt, that number's actually gone down. On average, he's right around, I think the number was in the 31% or 39% range of unassisted versus assisted. Since Rajon Rondo got hurt, that number's dropped down to 26%, which is real low. That would make him lower than just about anybody else in the NBA. And
did you actually look that up, or are you just like shooting from the hip?
I looked that up. I looked up the 26%.
No, but did you look up that would actually be lower than...
Well, over that time span, it's lower than LeBron. So if...
Okay, that's probably fair then.
So, you know, I just think...
Like Jamal Crawford's probably like 3%. Like.
Yeah, poor Jamal Crawford. Like he has Lance Stephenson syndrome, where if he doesn't dribble between his legs, what is he even out there for?
Well, Lance is younger, so he has Jamal Crawford syndrome.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair.
And at least, like, Jamal Crawford was a historically efficient offensive player for a while.
Yeah, Lance is just Lance. This is, I guess, the foundation of where I think Ingram's season can turn around offensively not just individually, but in how he plays with LeBron. If he starts recognizing, hey, I should probably do a little bit more off the ball and stop being so reliant on my on-ball talents, that maybe I do a little bit more work and set some screens for LeBron or off the ball and get myself closer to the basket when I catch it, or do more catching and shooting from three-point range, then okay. And to his credit, and this was a stat that I really liked, his three-point buckets are almost all assisted. He has very little unassisted three-point
pull-up threes.
Huh? Yeah.
Pull-up threes.
Right, yeah. Almost all of his three-pointers are assisted. And that's a good thing. So if he just does more of that and more of cutting to the basket, I think you can start to see how things turn around for him in terms of the full team context and also with LeBron.
You want to guess where his second most frequent shot type is from, though?
Probably like the 8 to 10 foot range.
It's mid-range.
Yeah.
He's taken 99 shots from the restricted area. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. 73 from mid-range.
Oof.
And the next is in the paint. The next one is in the paint, non-restricted area.
But those are semi-tough shots. Like those
are still semi, but it's still like it's better than mid-range. I would imagine that those are better shooting percentage in general than mid-range. He's actually he's shooting significantly better on those. He's shooting 52.3 versus 35.6 on mid-range.
Yeah, that number needs to drop.
If you're shooting your second most frequent amount of shots or mid-range shots, you got to be like Chris Paul. You can't be 35.6%.
Right. It's funny. There's a fun.
That's on 73 shots. That's not cherry picking stats. That's a significant sample size.
There's a fun analogy to be made here, where such a high percentage of his shots are from a spot that he's bad from, and you take that over and basically analogize that with Luke Walton's rotation being so reliant on a lineup that doesn't work. See what I did there? Full circle. Life is a circle. Time is a
I'm not sure that I followed, but...
Really?
Yeah, I'm also very tired, though. Okay. So.
Well, that's fine. Let's finish, though, on a positive. And this is where I want to make sure... It sounds
those
like...
Those of you that have been screaming and like pounding against your dashboard at Anthony for complaining the entire podcast, this is your time. We're finally going to say nice things. Maybe.
Well, no, we've said some... I said some nice things about Beasley.
Yeah, that's true. I can't imagine that's what most people were going to a Lakers podcast for, though.
Fair point.
They're like, oh, well, at least Beasley's good.
So we're going to finish here on a positive, and I'm going to segue from the Ingram conversation that we just had here. And I want to make sure you guys know, Ingram does have value as a basketball player. I believe he's still a net positive for the Lakers right now on and off court numbers. I think he's like a +2 or something like that.
I don't have that pulled up, but
I'm pretty sure that's what it is. And that's because of how good he is on the defensive side. And the Lakers somehow wildly are a top 10 defense this late in the season.
They're what, seventh?
They're seventh, yeah. Right. Although over the last
They've been second since they got Tyson Chandler. Yeah. That I know. That's been crazy. There was like a week where they were first since they got Tyson Chandler, and everyone's like, oh, that's small sample size. He's gonna be washed up. And it's like, well, okay, now it's been 13 games, so like that's more than half the season so far.
At least they were kind of sort of right? The Lakers did slip all the way from one to two. but I do want to say though that
Ingram is still a +3.1, by the way.
Ingram is a +3.1?
Yeah, he's a +3.1.
Yeah, that's about what I thought.
And the Lakers are a +0.7 when he's on the bench. So they're still doing better with him than without him.
Yeah.
Poor Travis Ware.
Has he played this season? -8.9.
Huh?
Have you seen Moritz Wagner's on and off?
Oh, yeah. Poor kid.
Less Wagner, I guess.
He's 2.5 off, and then on, he's a -25.6. It's okay. I'm rooting for him to figure it out. He seems like a very nice guy.
I think he can figure it out. I like his game.
I am dubious about his ability to guard.
Yes.
Yeah.
I agree. But regarding the Lakers defense, though, I want to credit four players here. I think there are four guys who really deserve a ton of credit here.
I think the coach deserves a little bit of credit, too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yes.
And
with all the criticism Luke's gotten for the offense, like Pete made this point beautifully, and then a lot of people have parroted it since. But Luke did a great job in shifting the way that Ingram and Kuzma defend. Mm-hmm. And as far as like Kuz is chasing guys around screens, and he's admitted that he's more engaged doing that. Like it was very honest. And Ingram, he's putting him more on the ball because he'll actually pay attention. So
seems like it's important. And the four guys that I wanted to credit, though, I want to credit one, Tyson Chandler, who maybe is he the greatest free agent acquisition that the Lakers have had in the last 5 years.
It's hard to argue. I mean, they brought in LeBron. That was obviously very hyped, but I'm just saying they didn't turn it around until Tyson got to town. So,
just like Kobe not winning a title without Derek Fisher.
Yeah, I'm just saying. Like, we all know who the real hero was. So, you think that was on Derek Fisher's like LinkedIn resume?
Oh, that's like definitely
Kobe. That's like bullet point number two. Kobe never won a title without me.
If I was
Fisher, number one, it's like played X amount of years in the NBA. Number two is like Kobe never won a title without me.
If I was Fisher, I would text that to Kobe every chance I got.
Just like Josh Hart texts Mo Wagner, "You're not a national championship champion." Every chance he gets, yeah. So, but anyway, you wanted to credit some players.
So yeah, one, Tyson Chandler, two, JaVale McGee, who, to his credit, like, it's not easy, as we talked about earlier in the show regarding the sacrifice that one of the starters might eventually have to make here. It can't have been easy for JaVale to see Tyson Chandler come into town and potentially have to sacrifice there.
Yeah, so this is actually something that I had been thinking about, because like JaVale, early on during the season, he was very cognizant about pushing back on the narrative that he couldn't play this many minutes. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden the Lakers bring in a guy that seems to validate that criticism. And initially he didn't say anything that was like, "I don't want Tyson here," or anything like react in any negative way. It was just like watching him in interviews when people would ask him about Tyson, there was like, yeah. There was kind of like a hesitancy. Yeah,
there was
times
a tone.
To like, yeah, there was a tone thing. It was like, I don't want to read too much into it, but there was a little bit of it. But lately, it's been like, I think he's seen, okay, this guy's not going to take my role. I think they've probably talked like a little bit more, and he's seen Tyson is not trying to come in here and like house of cards him. And so, like, to his credit, he's been playing really well. I think he's probably, as much as he pushes back on this narrative, I think this is true for all players. I think they all play more effective in shorter bursts.
Yeah.
Well, because you can expect, especially guys like JaVale that are so predicated on hustle.
I think that's a law of economics.
You can make the argument probably for some scorers that they need a little bit more time to get into rhythm and things like that. Like, I think there are some players that maybe you could make the case they get a little bit better in, like, maybe not an overextension of minutes, but in like they play better when they play 20 versus when they play 10 type of thing.
I think that's a law of, it's called the law of diminishing returns. Like everything happens better in shorter bursts.
Well, but the diminishing returns only kick in at a certain point.
No, I think that's like immediate for across all things. Like
I disagree, but I got an A in economics, so what do I know?
when you eat like a steak, your first bite is always the best one. And then from there, the thing.
God.
Yeah. Oh, you wouldn't be able to relate, seeing as you eat less.
I've eaten steak before.
Apparently not, if you stopped eating it. I said Tyson first. I said JaVale deserves a lot of credit second. I think Brandon Ingram deserves a lot of credit third, because like that game against the Dallas Mavericks.
Anthony, I think Ingram should be benched. Also, Anthony, he deserves a lot of credit for his improved play. That was a verbal meme for you.
There you go. There you go. Coming together, like it's that one meme, right? Where they
the two guys like grabbing each other's hands, and you can't tell if they're arm wrestling or agreeing together.
Analyzing Brandon Ingram, and then those two things. I do think though that Ingram, in both the games that the Lakers have played the Dallas Mavericks this year, just gave Luka Doncic all kinds of problems. And when you consider the things that Doncic is doing to the rest of the league right now, that's quite a bit of a...
Ingram's kind of tailor-made to guard a guy like that.
He is. Well, but I think to Ingram's credit, though...
I'm not taking credit away from him. I'm just saying, like, I think he is... I think that's exactly the type of player he's built to guard.
But I think he's also addressing defense a lot smarter than he did last season, where he realizes and he recognizes, oh, wait, I'm longer and more athletic than just about everybody I can guard. I can take different angles because that means I can recover a lot better than
his arms
in
their airspace.
Yeah. And I think just learning that, And it's something that gives me confidence that he might figure it out offensively. Like, if he can figure it out so well defensively and use his brain in terms of his approach to a aspect of the game, then that tells me he might be able to do that elsewhere. So I think
he's a smart guy. I think he will figure this out.
Yeah. So he's the third guy. And then the last guy on here is Lonzo, who I think one thing that people tended to forget in analyzing Lonzo's defense to start the year was that he missed all of training camp and almost all of the preseason. And with that knee surgery thing.
And the offseason.
Yeah, and a good chunk of the offseason. And so he was working himself, I think, at the beginning of the season into shape. And now he's having more of the impact that we saw from last year. And I think all of these things kind of coming together at the same time have led to the Lakers vaulting upward across this list of teams' abilities defensively. And then Luke Walton kind of tying everything together. It's been a lot of fun to watch this team grow on that end of the court.
Yeah, and so this has been the Irwins. That was our new maybe recurring award segment. I'm sorry, Kuz was snubbed. got zero credit for the defensive improvement. So
no, you gave him credit.
Yeah, I gave him credit, but he didn't get credit from you. You said there were four guys you wanted to credit. So
well, yeah, I don't like it when we just decide, okay, it's just everything that we do is in multiples of five. It's weird.
So you snubbed Kuz because you don't like the number five. That was a new tick for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I think we're probably good. I mean, the defense has been a lot better. The Lakers, so this is where we get to say, suck it, haters, and the Lakers can be a better defense than you thought. Yeah. And we saw all of your jokes about how no one was going to try on that end because they were all going to take LeBron's lead, and it turns out no. Like good employees, they have decided that they're going to let their boss succeed, let their boss delegate defense to them and work really hard on that area, and then so that he can kind of take care of offense for them.
It's worked so far.
Yeah. Hey, they're kind of like if this was like football, they're the defense and LeBron's the offense.
If we just worked off of the final three quarters of the last two games, that's a really fun team to watch.
Yeah.
Like the Lakers, I said this on Friday night. Jen and I were pesky.
They're pesky.
They are. And they get out and they run, and it's a fun brand of basketball to watch. That's why it's so stark a difference when they aren't playing that way that it's so frustrating when it doesn't happen, right?
Yeah.
So
they just,
more
for whatever reason, have decided to tank first quarters. They're like, maybe it makes it more interesting for them. They're like, let's see how much we can get down by and then come back.
To be fair, I would do whatever I could to make things interesting against the Phoenix Suns.
LeBron wants to beat Kobe's clutch records, so he's just trying to keep these games close so that he can have more game winners in a Laker uniform.
It's never going to happen because Kobe had so many of them. But if that ever happens,
could you imagine? That would burn the internet down.
Man,
anyway, there was one. Since we're starting to trend towards wrapping up here, there was one. I was looking through the lineups, and of the lineups that play more than 15 minutes, do you want to guess what 5-man combination has the best net rating? This is fun with stats
of at least 15 minutes.
Of at least 15 minutes. Don't look it up.
I couldn't look it up if I wanted to. All right. Of at least 15 minutes. So I'm guessing
Anthony just learned. I'm just going to say this. Anthony just learned to use the NBA stats site last week, and it's been an entertaining addition to his articles and Slack. We'll just get random messages at 1 a.m. It's like, guys, you won't believe what Ingram's shooting on mid-range jumpers. No, Anthony, we know. We looked at that site before.
It's been less recent than a week ago.
Okay, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, it's like a week and a half at least.
Yeah, okay.
But yeah, all right. So the lineup, all right. So is it Rondo?
Think it's a lineup tailor made to make you angry.
Yeah. So I'm thinking
you got two of them.
I think it's Rondo. You got two of them. Lance. Is Ingram in there?
No.
KCP.
You got it.
Is Beasley in there?
No.
Okay. JaVale?
Nope.
Chandler?
Nope.
Wow.
It's Hart and Zubats.
That has to be.
We figured out the key. They got Leshovica.
What's the net rating?
19 minutes together. They have an offensive rate. This is hilarious. They have an offensive rating of 90.5. but a defensive rating of 59.5.
That's amazing. They're
like 59.5 points per 100 possessions if you extrapolated it. So I'm sure that that's not garbage time and totally a sustainable result, so the Lakers should play them more. They have a net rating of 31.
Yeah, I completely agree. Get on that, Luke. Although while we're on plus minus stuff, the trio of LeBron, Hart, and Chandler has like a net rating, or no, has a defensive rating of 80.
That actually seemed somewhat, the bench with LeBron lineups have played really well.
Yeah, I want. Well, yeah, that's because they aren't the starters.
Yeah, that's fair. Right.
That'll do it for this episode of the Lake Show.
Are we gonna declare our enemy of the week, or was it just the haters that said that the Lakers couldn't play good defense?
Well, I was gonna make the enemy of the week the starting lineup. Can I not do that?
No, we each get to nominate our own. So.
All right, so yeah, my nomination is the starting lineup. They're making me root against the Lakers.
Mine is, I guess we now this is two. I can't say opposing bloggers like 2 weeks in a row now because like that was what it was last week. Mine is...
I should be the enemy of the show, right, if I'm rooting against the Lakers?
Yeah, I guess it's you. I guess Anthony Irwin is our The Lake Show official enemy of the week for rooting for the Lakers to lose so they change the starting lineup because he's an analytics nerd. Don't listen to what this numbers nerd that just figured out NBA.com like a week and a half ago tells you. The starters are fine. The Lakers are winning.
That's great. I'm an enemy of my own podcast. How about that?
Well, next week we'll do Pete. We'll really see how angry we can make people.
Oh man, if we ever say anything negative about Pete, this show's over.
I never would. Pete's great.
Yeah, he is. All right, that'll do it for this episode of the Lake Show. We'll be back again next week. Make sure you guys are checking out all the other shows. We have maybe a new edition.
Yeah, we have a new edition coming this week, coming to you all tomorrow. So there will be a Wednesday show starting tomorrow. And I'm not going to say who it is yet, but it's going to be fun. And we have that's like an ominous phrasing. I always forget that's like has a negative connotation.
Yeah,
like, I also would encourage all of you to, if you're not already, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Google Podcasts or Spotify or wherever else you buy and sell or just download for free. This podcast is free. You don't have to pay for it. Podcasts. So go and do that. Subscribe. Tell your friends. Leave a review. If you don't want to leave an Enemy of the Week review, please leave a 5-star review, either saying what you like about the podcast. That's great. We appreciate that. It's really good for my self-esteem, especially when you roast Anthony and say that I'm great. It makes me feel really good about myself. And like some of those are burner accounts just for me, just making myself feel good. But it's also like a place where you can tell us, is there something that you want more out of from this show? Like leave a 5-star review and then just tell us what you want more of out of this show. Like it's not necessarily, we don't have to do the mailbag thing. We aren't going to steal what was originally my idea for that other podcast that we sometimes post on Silver Screen and Roll.
I don't think that was your idea.
No, that was 100% my idea.
No, I don't think that was.
Now, okay, you're definitely the enemy of the week now.
Have a great week, everybody. We'll talk to you.
you can take us out.
I can't. Have a good one, everybody.
Hello, I'm Spencer Hall from SB Nation, and I want to tell you about my new show, It Seemed Smart. It Seemed Smart is a show about people doing things that, for some reason or another, seem smart at the time. Those things might include doing a little cocaine and driving a bike up a mountain. Or, I don't know, maybe racing 100 miles per hour across the country in the middle of the night with no one's permission. Or even stealing a bat from an umpire's room in a Major League Baseball park. Check it out. And if you like it, tell a friend. I'm Spencer Hall. Don't do anything smart.